Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. And we welcome the governor of New York State, Andrew Cuomo, speaking with WAMC's Alan Chartok. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Who's a gentleman? Thank you very much for your appearance here today, Governor. It's always great to see you. So I got a lot of questions for you. I was out late last night, and I'm a bear of a mood. I'll just ask you little simple questions, and then you can just answer them as only you can, okay?
That'd be fine.
All right, here we're going. You have talked about the budget. You got the analysis in the Times. You got pretty much everything you wanted. Speaker Hastie said that he wasn't happy with a lot of it. What do you make of that?
First, I'm going to let go the points you made that you were out last night and you're in a bad of a mood. Almost sounds like you imbibed too much, doctor. But let me ask.
No, I didn't eat anything. I sat there in a room full of people. They were eating wonderful food, but I'm on a particular kind of diet where you can't eat. Oh, you can only eat for 8 hours a day, and my 8 hours had been long gone. So that's why I'm in a bad mood.
Was there any drinking involved, doctor?
Yes, they all drank, but not me. I don't drink. I don't do
not
that.
Not at all.
No.
Not one. Not a sip.
Okay. Not a sip, and I'm okay. Telling you. And okay. The implication that I do is deeply resented by me.
No, well, first of all, there's nothing. I didn't say drink to excess. It was just that you have a drink, which is fine. People have a drink, and that's nice. And we enjoyed wine in my family. Moving right along, on the budget, I think the budget was fairly straightforward this year. Number one, we had a number of glaring policy areas that I pointed out very early on. You can call them lines in the sand, but I said as a matter of public responsibility, there were certain issues that we had to address. We had to do criminal justice reform. We had to fund mass transit. We had to address public finance. We had to make a property tax cap permanent. And then you had the numbers on the budget. And on the numbers, everybody wants more money. You had a new legislature, and they had made a lot of promises. And people in government, you want more money to do more good things. They believe, frankly, that more money is always synonymous with doing more good, which I don't believe it is. They leave out management. But then on the numbers, the Senate budget didn't raise any taxes. The Assembly budget did raise taxes. So the Assembly budget, in truth, had more revenue to spend because they raised taxes. The Senate budget raised no new taxes. Why? Because, yes, they're a Democratic Senate, but they still represent moderate areas, and they want to get reelected. So you still have Long Island and Westchester and Hudson Valley and upstate where people don't want any additional taxes. So that was the constraint of the budget that, frankly, I think people missed. Once you have a Senate budget that raises no new taxes, it means you can't spend any more money, especially when we have a revenue shortfall. So that constrained the spending by definition.
And so that's why Hastie is ticked off? Because he didn't get to spend more money?
Speaker Hastie, by his own budget, raised taxes and had more revenue. Mm-hmm. So he legitimately can say, I proposed higher spending, which he did because he proposed more taxes. The Senate said they supported higher spending, except they had no additional revenues. And at one point, its numbers and its math, and it's not political rhetoric, and they didn't support any more taxes. I actually supported more tax increases than the Senate did. We did a real estate transfer tax for mass transit funding. But that's what the budget came down to. You had policy items that I put a line in the sand, but if you asked any New Yorker, they would say those were the issues that had to be addressed. Then the Assembly didn't spend the money that they wanted, but they were honest and they had actually raised revenues. And the Senate needs to maintain their majority, right? You have a Democratic Senate. What is success First, basic functionality. Don't trip over your own feet. And second, they have to win the majority again next year.
Mm-hmm.
And to do that, they have to win those marginal seats. That's the bottom line. And the politics of New York City is different than the politics of upstate and Long Island, et cetera.
Good. Okay, moving right along, Governor, if you don't mind, I want to talk to you about there's a possibility. Alexandra Biaggi and others are threatening basically to run primaries against other Democrats. She won a primary, and is this a good idea, or is this a good example of a circular firing squad?
This is the proverbial circular firing squad. President Obama actually used that expression this past weekend. Yes. It's an oldie, but it's a goodie. Sort of like us, Doctor.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you are a bear today. But Nancy Pelosi is seeing it on the congressional side. We're seeing it here in the state. I think it is destructive. It's also an aberrational political moment. You normally don't have members attacking any members. I don't think it's productive. I think it's also dangerous. When a member attacks another member, you know, you better make sure you know what you're talking about. One of these attacks was about fundraising, but those members who made the attack did fundraising themselves during the budget. Andrea Stewart-Cousins and Mike Gennaris were doing $25,000 fundraisers in the shadow of the Capitol in the middle of the budget. And that's just a collection agency for the individual senators, the DSCC.
Well, you are too, right, Governor? I mean, you had a $25,000
seat. Yes. But I'm saying the hypocrisy is the members who stood up and criticized the fundraising. They themselves were doing fundraising, and Gennaris and Andrea Stewart-Cousins' fundraising goes to those members, right? Because what they call the DSCC committee is just a collection agency, gives money to those members. And many of those members were funded with millions of dollars of dark money from unions like 32BJ. Where is the public financing spirit? You know, I support public financing. By the way, I was elected because an independent expenditure committee dumped $1 million into my race. So I think it is dangerous. And also, in this cycle, the circular firing squad, today's reformer is tomorrow's incumbent.
Yeah, we've seen that.
Tomorrow's establishment. Right. So when they go to run next year, there's going to be a new primary challenger. Who is going to hold them to the perfect standard? Why did you let 32BJ finance your campaign? Why didn't you condemn them? Why didn't you condemn Mike Gennaris? Why did you take his dirty money? You know, it all comes around. It's a boomerang. It's karma. And in this cycle, it is destructive because what Speaker Pelosi is going through is Democrats attacking other Democrats for not being purist. And in this system, it is very, very hard to be a purist. And people are living in glass houses, so be careful how many stones you throw.
So where was Speaker Hastie during the debate over public financing of campaigns?
Public financing is less a question of do you support it, more a question of how do you do it. And it gets very complicated very quickly. And that's why we all supported it, putting it into a commission that could actually sit down and talk it through and figure it out. Not an independent commission. One of the editorial boards said you should appoint independent people. It's not independent. It's a process of the legislature. The commission then comes back, gives the legislature a bill. If they like it, it becomes law. If they don't like it, the legislature can pass a new law.
I'll believe it when I see it. you know, these guys in the assembly, specifically the Democrats, were all for it when the Republicans were running the Senate. But now that it has a chance of happening, we get commissions and reports and things of, that we are all too used to.
Look, the commission. No, hold on a second. The commissions.
What?
I'm sorry, you're in a bad mood. I am sorry, you are in a bad mood. And I feel it and I sense it, and I'm sure your listeners hear it. But I find that I believe my role as governor is to take your negative emotion, absorb it, not respond to it, and attempt to turn it positive. I think that's one of my roles as governor. So the cynicism you just expressed about commissions. This is not a commission. Give me a report and I'll put it on the shelf and I'll. This is give me a law.
We'll see.
And if nothing, okay, we'll see.
We'll just see about that.
Now, we'll just see.
You're backing an effort in Albany that would allow the State Department of Tax and Finance to release tax returns sought by Congress, namely President Trump's tax returns. Explain. Will we get to see, if this happens on the state level, will we get to see the federal returns also as an appendage of this?
No. You could only see the state return. There are a variety of approaches, and I've talked about a couple of them, but it's an interesting topic. The one proposal is a House committee, which now does not have the ability to subpoena our state Department of Tax and Finance to get a state tax form. Only a law enforcement agency can do that, and the House committee is not a law enforcement agent. They would have to go to a prosecutor. The prosecutor would have to do a subpoena. The point is to let the House committee get the state tax return Donald Trump files in the state. If you have the state tax return, you basically have a large window into the federal return. Because one plays off the other. The one proposal is House committee can be added to the list of state entities allowed to access the State Department, the State Department of Tax and Finance. And that's a political, obvious move, I think valid, but political. The question is going to be the legality, because there's going to be a lawsuit in 11 seconds. So, and putting on my old AG hat, if it looks politically targeted, the courts will be more likely to strike it down. So as broad as you can do it, the better. House committee for any elected official in the state of New York, you can get the tax returns.
And when you say House governor, you're talking about the assembly.
I'm sorry. I'm talking about the Congressional House Committee.
Gotcha. Okay. So that
they want the Congressional House Committee to be able to get a state tax return.
Gotcha.
So the broadest and I think most legally defensible would be any request from a Congressional House Committee to the State Department of Tax and Finance, you can get the return of a New York State resident. Any elected official. I had proposed, and I think not only politically and legally better, but also governmentally better, why not say any elected official or any person who runs for office in the state of New York, your tax return will be released. Period. No hypocrisy, no duplicity, no political games. You're an assemblyman, you're a senator, you want the president's tax return, release your own.
Okay, fine.
But just think about this, Alan. We'd be the first in the nation. Anyone who runs for office or holds office, if you didn't want to say just candidate, I would say candidates. But even if you said only, once you hold office, you must release your tax returns. If you want Donald Trump's tax returns, why don't you release your own? And by the way, we now have a law in the state that says the legislature has no outside income, which makes it very simple. It means you only have one source of income on your tax return. It's called the state of New York. Why not release it? That's what I've proposed. I think it would set a heck of a precedent for the entire country. You want to talk about transparency and disclosure? You take office in the state of New York, you release your tax returns. Okay. And for every year you serve, you release your tax returns. And this Trump bill this year, on the theory before, be careful what you say, because it will boomerang. In next year's elections for the Assembly and the Senate, I'm sure they're going to say, you were right to ask for Trump's tax returns. I'm your primary opponent. Why didn't you release your own? What are you hiding?
So there have also been proposals that that the state legislature would pass a bill saying if you want to run for president in the United States, you have to release your tax returns. Where are you on that one?
I would support that, too. But again, it's going to be the political litmus test, and then it's going to be the legal litmus test. You know, if we have passed a law that is clearly designed to help a Democratic Congress access Donald Trump's tax return, it'll be in the courts for years, because this really does raise serious constitutional questions. So the broader you make it, the better. Just this, Alan, if you want to be on a ballot in New York State, you must release your tax returns.
Okay, that's good.
Period.
Listen, I have 1,000 questions for you, Governor. I only got 13 minutes to ask them in. So let's just move it right along. Is that okay with you?
Whatever you say, it's your show. I respect you.
No,
you're the boss.
I'm just
a public servant.
I don't think so. Okay, so here, there are several law enforcement agencies are not complying with the new law prohibiting the release of mugshots. Some local sheriffs say it's up to them to decide who's right.
It is. Mugshots have met new technology. There are actually firms that gather mugshots and then almost extort you to pay them to take down the picture. Now, having a mugshot is obviously not good to be floating around the web. And having a mugshot doesn't necessarily mean you did anything wrong, right? You can be arrested, they take a shot, and then it turns out you were totally innocent, or whatever. But meanwhile, you have this unflattering photo of you. So I think, yes, we want disclosure, but we don't want an invasion of privacy, especially by some company that's doing it for a profit motive. So let the local law enforcement agency decide what's in the public interest.
But the newspapers don't like this because basically you're saying to newspapers and other media, you know, we're going to tell you what you can do.
Yeah, the newspaper doesn't like it until the son of the newspaper owner gets pulled over and gets a mugshot and is later acquitted. Then the newspaper owner will like it.
Okay. So, Hudson River cleanup, your administration and the DEC, what will you do if the federal EPA gives GE a certificate of completion for Hudson River cleanup?
We will sue them if there is any legal viability to the suit whatsoever. I'm very afraid of it. This has been going on many years. I believe this federal government is just deaf to environmental concerns. And here's a big corporation, GE, and this is ripe for a Trump doctrine of what's good for business is good for America. The cleanup is not complete, and the Hudson River is a beautiful asset that we must preserve and protect. And if there's any legal ability for us to sue, we will.
There are places that are not giving vaccinations in Hudson Valley, for example. You are aware on this one. In other words, our kids are in danger. There's measles outbreaks. There are people who think it's taking away their freedom. What do you make of it?
Look, it's a serious public health concern, but it's also a serious First Amendment issue. And it is going to be a constitutional legal question. Do we have the right, the society, government have the right to say you must vaccinate your child because I'm afraid your child can infect my child, even if you don't want it done and even if it violates your religious beliefs? So that's an issue that's going to be legally questionable, and I'm sure it's going to go down that path.
Representative Espelot came out in favor of granting driver's licenses to undocumented immigrants this week. You say?
I say what I've said. I was Attorney General Elliot Spitzer came out with a proposal. As I'm sure you recall, it created mayhem in the presidential. I said I supported it and I would defend it in the court. I think Speaker Heastie has said that it's an issue that he's going to pursue this session. And I think it's on the short list of open items for the legislature to tackle this session. Driver's licenses, ERA, Equal Rights Amendment, they didn't conclude. I think that's very important in this day and age of assaults on women. Let New York alter its constitution and have an ERA. The Assembly and the Senate have to work that out. Legalization of marijuana, prevailing wage, these are all issues that are on the short list for the rest of session. They're the tough ones, but what I've said to the legislature is I know everybody likes to pass their own bill. That's fun and easy, but our job is to do the hard ones, and driver's licenses is a hard one, but I think New York should lead. ERA, marijuana, prevailing wage. That's going to be the real test for the new Senate and Assembly.
Governor, how about Aiden dying? We've just lost a brother-in-law. He went through tremendous pain, wanted out. The law was not on his side to do this. There are many legislators who want it, and you say?
I say pass the bill. And it's a controversial issue. It's a difficult issue, but the older we get and the better medicine gets, the more we've seen people suffer for too long. My father started the Death and Dying Commission way ahead of his time, as usual. So it's a difficult issue, but it would need legislation.
And you'd sign it?
It depends on what the bill says.
Yeah,
but I think it's a situation we have to address, definitely.
Todd Howe, sentenced to 5 years of probation last week after cooperating with the government in several corruption trials. You've talked about this as being a great personal hurt to you. I'm wondering whether you have anything to say about what has happened here.
No, I haven't commented on it, and I don't intend to start now. I've stayed away from my commentary on the judicial process, except to say that I was fully supportive and cooperative, and I'm going to keep that position.
So rent control in New York, always a contentious issue. People living in places, that they would have to give up if rent control goes away. And you're saying?
Oh, I left rent control off the short list for the end of session. I'm sorry. We have to make changes, and we have to make changes this year. This system is absurd, and affordable housing is a precious commodity. And the system is just biased and abusive to the tenant. We have to get back to the rationale for these laws. You know, a landlord gets an increase if they make an improvement, major capital improvement or improvement to the unit. All right, but once the landlord is paid back, stop raising the rent. I get a new boiler in the building. Great, I understand. I have to pay for the new boiler or my proportionate share. But once the boiler is paid for, stop the increases. So there's a number of reforms that have to be made, and they have to be made this year. We had a Republican Senate that was highly protective of the real estate industry. They are no longer in control, and I think it's an ability to balance the scale in favor of the tenant.
So just to be clear, what you're saying is that this rent control thing has to be reformed to give more of a break to the tenant.
Yes, sir.
Gotcha. We see the whole business of trying to get people into college, kids into college, bribing somebody to help them with that. I know you have daughters, and I know that you would never consider doing something like that, right?
Obviously not. But now that you brought up daughters, so this weekend, two of the daughters come over. two out of three, which isn't bad. You know, it's hard. I'm at that stage where they're in their 20s. The last thing they want to do is go spend time with dad.
Sure.
But one of my daughters brings over the boyfriend. I call him the boyfriend.
Uh-oh.
I don't like to use names because names would suggest the permanency. So
Did you grill him?
The boy. Well, this is what I want. I want your unbiased opinion on
sure.
this one. Why would my daughter get defensive or the boyfriend get defensive
Uh-oh.
Just because I asked to do a background check?
Sure.
If you have nothing to hide, why do you have a problem with a background check?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
why would you have a problem with fingerprinting? It takes 2 minutes.
That's funny.
It washes
I can
right
only,
off.
I can only imagine my telling my daughter Sarah when she was courting, I want to fingerprint the guy. I mean,
what?
Why would
he have a problem unless he has something to hide?
Well, why would anybody do that? I mean, I remember your father telling me once a great story about how old man Rafa and his kids, his boys, grilled him for what seemed like an interminable period, and he wasn't happy about it. Don't you see?
That's true. He did tell that story, and he would say that it scarred him. He loved to use those dramatic, it scarred him forever. That's why I won't do that. No questioning. Just give me the fingerprints.
You're kidding, aren't you? You're obviously joshing me. Your kid comes home.
I tell my daughters, don't you bring home a boy unless you are prepared to have him fingerprinted.
I love it.
Just think about that.
I love it.
Maybe that's why they don't come over, Al. Come to think of it.
Well, one last thing. Twitter. Everybody's twittering these days. We got 2 minutes. People of color often don't use Twitter. So are we creating a political messaging system which leaves out people of color?
Oh, you created, I think the Times had a story on this today. We created an echo chamber for the elitists to talk to themselves and this little bubble of an unreal universe that then the political intelligentsia believes is representative of the world. During my primary campaign, the reporter said, oh, you have to watch Twitter. By the way, I don't look at Twitter. I said, Twitter is a bizarre universe where you all talk to each other. Oh, no, is it Twitter? You see this new movement, blah, blah, blah. I won the primary by a record number of votes. No governor in history got more votes than I did in the primary. Meanwhile, all these reporters are saying, oh, no, you're in trouble because I watch Twitter. It is an elitist bulletin board to talk to each other.
But the president, every time he opens his mouth, it's on Twitter, and that's policy we're talking about, isn't it?
The president has used it brilliantly. It's like throwing a stick and everybody runs to get it. He puts out Twitter. He rallies his base. He has the Democratic Party then spend the day responding to his rant of the day. Meanwhile, then instead of having the Democratic Party actually talk about what they would do and their policies and their belief and their agenda, they spend the day responding, and then cable news goes on, and they take the tweet, and they're going to respond to the tweet, and he drives the whole dialogue. He's a marketing man. That's what he does, and he is doing it as president, and people are falling for it.
It's always wonderful to have Andrew Cuomo with us. Governor, great fun, and I must say my mood has been elevated since you came on this morning, something that my other colleagues haven't been able to do for me. So thank you very much.
I thought you would go with me on the fingerprinting, and then I was going to use you as a reinforcement.
That's pretty funny. You'll probably make some headlines. Governor, thank you very much.
Feel better. Have a good day.
Bye.